Hey, welcome back to the episode of the Five Tool Podcast. I'm Dustin McComas, joined once again, as always, by Drew Bishop. And this is episode 153. It is Thursday, April 18th. The high school baseball regular season in Texas and well, certainly other places as well, too. But definitely in Texas is winding down. Those district races are intense in some areas and kind of decided in some others. But it's the final home stretch there, the final playoff push for some teams jockeying for position to get to the postseason, while other teams are not coasting, but are already in the playoffs and probably thinking about how that sets up in the future there. So it's a really, really exciting time for us. And we're brought to you by our friends at HitForth, the high-tech development center that produces pound for pound the most powerful and complete hitters in the state. Located in Austin, Texas, HitForth.com, and you can follow them on Twitter and Instagram as well. We're huge, huge fans of everything they do over there, the development side, the coaching side, the remote training side, the programs that they give their players access to, the accountability, the objective data, whether it's video, whether it's how hard you hit the ball and you know, certain pitches and certain locations. They have everything over there. They know exactly what they're doing to get you better. To go check out those guys at hitforth.com, and thanks to them for sponsoring the podcast. But Drew, how are you doing today? April is flying by. Part of the reasons why is, you know, we're at high school games Tuesday, Friday, sometimes Wednesday, sometimes Saturday, seeing a lot of players and a lot of good games as the season, regular season winds down and the postseason gets a little bit closer.
Yeah, it's been a week. I'll just say that we over in, on the home front, we've had sick baby, so 2 days home from school, car wreck, and it's some insurance stuff to deal with on that, but. So we've had a lot going on.
Yeah. It's Jack started swim lessons again yesterday. So it's been
we're back week two of being back on for Coy.
Yeah, so it's been kind of chaotic there. Sorry, I just got flustered. I saw Rafael Devers is going to get an MRI on his knee.
Oh no.
Oh man. It's the Red Sox have rolled out a split squad type lineup today. Not good shape, and got Devers on a couple fantasy teams. Like he's been a lock for years to basically get like 650 plate appearances, like hardly ever misses time, like ever. Just kind of a really safe player, and he hasn't been a safe player. Shoulder, knee, it's just been kind of season for hell for the Red Sox. But we got a lot to talk about. In addition to seeing some games this past week and weekend, we updated, as we teased last week, we updated our 2024 5-tool Texas 55 for that senior class. You can go to 5tool.org and see all that coverage. We've got a story about the new 55, a story about the just miss list, which is effectively the next 55 guys. And then also I wrote about 25 other players. I just kind of wanted to give some attention to and shout out for their talent level and their production and what's going on with those guys during their senior season. So we will get to some more in-depth discussion about that list, but we wanted to go through and talk about some of the games we've seen recently, which we'll end up mentioning some of the guys on this list, which will be a little bit of a segue later on. But Drew, I know you've seen some powerhouses on the private school side, on the public school side. So take us through some of those games you've checked out recently and some of those hitting and pitching performances.
Yeah. So Friday I got to go over and see Preston Wood versus JP2 and a Xavier Mitchell versus Jack Frankel matchup. Mm-hmm. And it was good. I got some good stuff out of it. You know, on the Preston Wood side, that's just a loaded lineup, and yeah, like they can strike quick. And as evidenced by Friday, like first pitch of the game, AJ DiPaolo gets a base hit. Second pitch of the game, Chris Patterson hits a double off the wall to score DiPaolo. And just like that, they were off to the races. So a lot of really good at bats from them. A lot of really good players in that lineup. I'm a huge fan of Trent Vallade. I just he just has an advanced feel in the box. And he's starting to really grow and get stronger and all that. And he's gonna be a monster over the next couple of years. But he's ahead of the curve of where I thought he would be at this point. He's come a long way in over a year, but like, I mean, you've always been able to see that he's a really good baseball player. It was just a matter of waiting for the body to catch up to the skill. And it's starting to do that, but he's an exciting player. Lash Henderson, we've talked about him a lot. I mean, that's what he like physically, that's what big leaguers look like, and he's a monster. Another guy that, I don't think we've talked about a whole lot, Jake Felsman, has really good actions in the infield. I like the way he moves, the way he, took in and out was, definitely intriguing. Good feet, good athlete. I just like the way he gets rid of the ball. It had some good swings throughout the game as well. Louis Baseball, Louis Bessard, was really good. I thought too, he did a good job spraying a ball the other way down the left field line from the left side. That was ended up being a double. But you can just tell, like, he just knows what he's doing. He's got a plan. Just nothing seems big for him. He's just on time and, relaxed in the box, and just a really good baseball player. On the mound, Xavier Mitchell, like, I always remember Skip talking about this a lot. Like, this is the one of the reasons he liked to always go see high school games was, you get to see him in a different environment, with, some emotion in the game, some, more people in the stands potentially. And if he had his way, he liked to see a guy struggle a little bit. And Xavier started out slow in the game. But I felt like I got to learn a lot about him watching him compete, and he battled through like some self-inflicted traffic. He walked some guys, and some guys got on base and all that. But I think in the end, over six innings, he only allowed one earned run. So pitched his way out of it a couple times and really bared down. Never seemed to like really get flustered or outside of himself. The stuff was really good again. He continues to tick up on the stuff as he gets stronger. Like, he's made a noticeable jump physically from last year. But I mean, he's got swing and miss stuff for sure. And he's, people that like dealing with some projection, he's going to be a dream for them. Like, you can dream on a lot of stuff to come from him. On the JP2 side, Jack Frankel. You say started off a little bit slow. He continues to use that really good changeup to both lefties and righties. He got in the middle innings and kind of caught a groove and looked like the guy that we've seen and heard and talked about before. But he was up to 91 several times over the course of the game. I wasn't able to post his exact velocities for the game because I left my clipboard that had all my notes in the game or in the press box at Rockwell the next day. So didn't have all the information on my tweet, but I thought I saw some good things from him. I think he'd be best served to refine the breaking ball a little bit. It showed good shape a couple times. And in those middle innings, when he was really effective, I thought that pitch looked better in that little window. But he's got three quality pitches up to 91, can move the ball both sides of the plate. You saw the flashes of all the stuff you've ever heard about him. He just on the day Preston Wood got the best of him, they really squared up some balls. Looked like they had a really good plan. Did a good job sitting back and taking some balls the other way. Like I said, Bussard hit a double the other way. I'm trying to think of who else it was off the top of my head, but somebody poked a ball over first down the right field line. So they had a plan. I mean, I think that was they knew they were going to go up against a good pitcher and stay true to that, and were patient and made him work, and ended up coming out the win. But yeah, I mean, it's Preston Wood's loaded, man. They come at you in waves. There's a lot of really good players. Max Bachman, is a guy that we're all excited about, big time 2027. And then the next day, I went over to Rockwall and saw Rockwall versus Southlake. I got to see Davis Perkins on the mound, which I like seeing those guys that play positions on the mound just to see how they look in a different environment. Obviously, I think he's pretty clearly a middle infielder at the next level, but it's good to see the athleticism on the mound. I mean, he popped a couple of 91s, showed a quick little breaking ball that I thought was good, got some swing and miss, and froze a couple guys for some strikeouts. Grant Moore had a double. It's Southlake's always interesting because they're so deep. They really mess with those roster or lineups and move guys around. And definitely with it being a Saturday, some of the normal guys weren't in the lineup. On the Rockwall side, Landon Locke got the start. I thought, he just competes. Like, stuff's not overwhelming, but he just competes, throws it in there, and gets some outs. And then let's see. Jake Pickering, we've talked about him some, catch left-handed hitting catcher, big physical bat. He hit a ground rule double that kind of was unfortunate because he would have scored two and only ended up scoring in one because it went over the plate. But I like his at bats in the box. He's a good player, for sure. I mean, I think he does a really good job of being patient. He takes some tough pitches, and same with Hudson Holt. I mean, we've talked about Hudson quite a bit. And he, the thing that I've been most impressed with him over the course of the year, I mean, like, we've seen him get some extra base hits. But man, he shows some real maturity and patience at the plate and in some big situations too, which, sometimes really good hitters at that age can have a tendency to want to hit and want to swing and want to make something happen. And he's taken some big walks and laid off some really tough pitches in some big situations that I think is just kind of speaks to his, how advanced he is at the plate, and have some maturity there. And then Dylan Cheek came in to close out the game. Got a little dicey at the end. And he was able to pitch his way out of it, being up to 91 on the day, and then or in the inning, and then throwing a couple of good breaking balls in that little stretch too. But yeah, two good teams, obviously. Rockwall's had Pearson Reebok's been out for about a couple of weeks, I think. I think they're hoping to get him back soon. But it's been good. In his place in center field, Mason Pate's kind of picked up the slack. I've been impressed with him. Like, there's something to work with there. Like, tall, lanky, can really run. Plays with some intent in the outfield. Like, he goes hard after the ball. And we remember that catch against off Hoover in the Heath game that was, SportsCenter type stuff. So there's something there with him. He's been hitting at the top of the lineup, and he can run a little bit. So he's an intriguing player too, for sure. And then Tuesday, I went over and saw JJ Pierce, and I think they're starting to click at the right time, man. Like, they put together just a lot of really, really good at bats. Tyler Sessions is having a good season. He hit a home run and a double, home run to pull side gap, and then the double to the opposite field gap off the wall. Vince Villegas hit a home run. But Carson Bailey was kind of the main story of the game. He was up to 93, 89, 93, was still 89, 90 in the fifth, threw some really good breaking balls. Flashed a couple changeups in there. I think that's something that's going to be a workable pitch in the future. He just needs to keep throwing it and getting the feel for it. But man, his athleticism started to take over. I mean, every time out I've seen him, this was the third time this spring, and like, he's such a good athlete. And early on in the season, I think we talked about it, he seemed like he was kind of thinking his way through his delivery a little bit. But that is not the case anymore. That athleticism is really starting to show, and I think that that's going to be a big deal for him as he continues to develop and keep going out there. And he's missed some time, and been on some pitch counts coming back from Tommy John. So and that's normal. Like, the inconsistency can be a thing at that time. Like, he walked six, but it didn't feel like that. I thought overall his control felt pretty good, and he was definitely in command. I mean, he gave up one hit on the night, so I mean, there was never really many threats. And he did a good job. I mean, he threw a lot of non-stressful pitches just by keeping them off the bases. Even though he had the walks, it didn't have that feel. Like I didn't feel like he was wild or didn't have command. I thought that was one of the best outings he's had as far as like really being in control from the get-go. And you know, he can continues to ascend upwards.
Yeah, that's, when those guys, I mean, better than I, you went through it, but when you come back from a surgery like that and a rehab and stuff, it's, you try to just be free and loose and not really think about that again. And it can take time. It can take time. It might take some guys a couple outings. It might take guys more outings. It might just kind of come and go. But, from the way he's been throwing most recently, it's like, okay, he's starting to look like the guy we saw in the fall where he threw for the Rangers North Texas scout team, and the scout section was like, who is this guy? Who's this athletic lefty on the mound with a fast arm throwing 93 miles an hour with a little bit of a breaking ball? And it's like you're starting to see that guy again. So I mean, we talked about Pierce before the season, like, man, if they're probably gonna really pitch. And then Deegan Kubot, the way he's been coming on, which I think is one of your best five tool academic team scouting jobs, is like
Thank you.
he's throwing 94 miles an hour in front of us twice, and he's got a pretty good delivery, and he's starting to be able to start games. And AJ Ripley is a guy that made our updated five tool 55 because left-handed could really pitch. The velocity was climbing, the breaking ball was there. So if they get Bailey to keep throwing like that, they're gonna create some problems, I think, in the postseason, because you get into those three game series, oftentimes there's a huge difference between that third starter or that top reliever, from team to team. It can oftentimes be the difference.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt.
So I went to I kind of was like, you know what, I haven't gone, well, I went to San Antonio this past week, but I hadn't gone to see Braylon Payne in a while, and I was like, I'm just gonna go see Braylon Payne. And they were playing Fort Bend Travis, who had Jaden Blaylock. I was like, it'd be a good opportunity to see both of those guys and get a live look at them. Man, Braylon Payne, he's really good and he's getting better. It's it, the arrow is definitely pointing up, and I think a lot of people don't realize that he's really like young for the class. I think he's going to be one of the youngest draft eligible guys in the upcoming draft. And I think we've been kind of seeing that play out over the summer and now into the spring, where he's bigger, he's stronger. But I think he's also just, he's grown into his body and like understanding how to use those gifts and handle the new strength and the athleticism and all those things. And he made, I mean, all those guys at the top made putting together our updated list really, really hard. But like, he especially made it really hard, because I saw him, I was like, man, that's the best I've seen Braylon Payne. Like, the swing was really consistent. And that was kind of my thing with him on the pass, is he had some bat to ball ability. And like, I mean, we saw it in area code, like where he would not take best swings at times. It would still pop balls like 99 miles an hour off the bat with a wood bat. It gets really good pitching. So there was obviously a lot of like raw hitting talent in there, but it was just like the swing consistency. Well, it's really consistent now. He got the pitches down. I mean, first swing of the game, he hit a bomb to dead center field, like first swing, against a guy that wasn't throwing hard, but it was kind of a unique sidearm, low slot kind of a look. And he times the first pitch and hits it over the wall for a bomb. And then later in the game, he smacked a hard single up the. He took three swings all game, and one was a homer, one was a hard single, and one was a line drive right at the shortstop, and he walked in his other at bat. So, you're starting to see some real growth, real exciting growth on the hitting side. And we know he can really run. I think he's gotten faster, which makes sense. He's gotten stronger. I mean, he's more physical. He's definitely stronger, which, that's what say sometimes. Like, when guys get stronger, they can get faster. Those really good athletes. And I think that's happening with him. I thought his arm strength was better. I thought his arm in center field was better. Like, he was just a better player. And he made, like, I left thinking, I was like, is this the best prospect in the state? And I've kind of left field Gillen games thinking that. I mean, I've seen the stuff that you've sent, when you saw Wyatt Sanford and talked about him, and I was like, man, he might be the best player in the state. And then the way Dayson Hill's throwing as a left-handed pitcher is like, oh man, those guys are really, really valuable. So it definitely gave me a lot to think about, but really it was just a lot of fun. Like it's fun when you drive hours to go see somebody who's really, really good, and they're really, really good. Like they're really, really talented. Like those are the that's what separates the top guys, is that when you go see them, you see something that's just different than their peers. And that's what I saw with Brilliant Payne. Just the way he carries himself, the way he competes, there's just so much to like about him. And he's still getting a ton of scouting interest there. There are some scouts there, and I didn't recognize a few of them, which probably means they were at least cross checkers, maybe more than that, going down to see him. But he was really, really good. He's getting better. His arrow continues to point up. And I kind of I'm we don't really have rooting interest in teams, but I'm kind of hoping Elkins gets into the playoffs, because I think it's been a while for them. And just too, to see like what he would do in the playoffs and that sort of setting and how he's elevated that program. But they came up on the short end of this game, and a big reason why for Fort Bend Travis was Jaden Blalack was really, really good. His first at bat of the game, he hit a home run. And he proceeded to hit two more rockets that ended up either bouncing or hitting the wall in left center field. And he was playing through a minor kind of like a muscle injury in his leg. So he wasn't playing defense. He was just DH. You kind of see it when he'd run too. Like a ball that would have been a sure double was just a single for him, because he didn't want to push it too much. But he still really, really hit. And it's a good swing. DBU, it's another job of them identifying a guy that can really hit early on. And he's gotten stronger. I think he's gotten a little bit more athletic as well. But you start thinking about right-handed hitters in that class, in that 2025 class, he's got to be up the list. I think he's gonna really, really hit. And they had a couple other guys who really caught my attention too. Two sophomores, Rhett Kalodielka, who's a catcher, left-handed hitting catcher. Hitting cleanup for those guys, ended up hitting a mistake pitch over the right field wall for a home run. I like the swings. I kind of like the plate skills. Well, he had a good idea of what he was swinging at, when to kind of unleash things. He's a pretty athletic mover. I think that Fort Bend Travis should be really, really excited about him, and he's a guy that I think is going to get some attention this summer as a 2026. And then another 2026, Davis Kinney, who's a multi-sport athlete. I believe he was a leadoff hitter playing center field for those guys, and you can just kind of see there's some raw talent and some tools there, and that he's going to project, he's going to grow to his body. There's a lot to like about the swing and the move, the actions in the outfield, and the future arm, and what all that could be. So he was another guy that caught my attention as well. But it was good to get down there and see Elkins and see Brilliant Payne. Just to kind of get another look at him, and his arrow is definitely pointing up for sure. And then on Tuesday, I tried to double dip in San Antonio. I knew I wasn't going to be able to see all this one game, but I went to go see a couple innings of Reagan and San Antonio Johnson, two teams that we've seen, either me or Tracy have seen a few times throughout the year. But I was like, yeah, it's a 5 p.m. start. I can go catch a few innings of this before I go over to Smithson Valley and Bernie Champion. And I saw Caleb Rogers on the mound for a couple innings, 85 to 88, touch 89. Slider was good. You can see the projection there. He's got a really good changeup, but he hung a right-on-right changeup to Masa Chilcutt. And Masa Chilcutt kept, he like recognized it kind of as it was happening, kept his hands back, ended up pulling a homer over the left field wall to get those guys on the scoreboard early. And it's kind of what Masa does, man. His hands, the way they work, his bat to ball ability, that's just kind of been the consistent thing for him every time I've seen him this year and last year as well. But Rogers, you can see the projections, obvious, the athleticism on the mound. Fastball slider, he kind of manipulates the breaking ball to give a little bit of a curve look as well. The changeup spin is really, really low. Just a really exciting player. And on the other side for San Antonio Johnson, Derek Maples, who's headed to St. Mary's, really good delivery, only up to 85, but it's going to project. Throws a lot of strikes, senior righty, True slider was good. Another guy that had a quality changeup around 78 miles an hour, just a really easy strike throwing delivery. And one of those guys, like, you know what? He's gonna get to school, he's gonna add weight, he's gonna add muscle, and all of a sudden, if that ticks up to, you know, sitting upper 80s, bumping low 90s, you got a guy that's gonna throw a lot of strikes at St. Mary's. So he was a player that was fun to watch. And I left when it was 1-1 after 2 innings, because traffic in San Antonio can be bad. And I looked later that night, and the game was 1-1 in the eighth, and it got suspended, I think, for curfew, which I believe is a district rule in that district. I believe, which is northeast, I think, in San Antonio. So they actually had to resume the game the next day. But I think Maples threw 8 innings, which it was like, oh, it throws 8 innings. But I think his pitch count was super low because the guy just throws a ton of strikes, and it's really, really easy. And then Caleb Rogers ended up only giving up one run, I think, through like 6 innings, sort of something like that. So Reagan ended up winning the resumption of that game on Wednesday, which is kind of a pivotal district matchup there. But I went over to Bernie to go see Bernie Champion in Smithson Valley, and I had yet to see Champion in person this year. I'd seen Smithson Valley a couple times, but that's turned into a nice little rivalry game between two teams that are really, really good at the 5A level. And it was a fun game. It was a really fun game. Bernie Champion ended up winning. It's 3-2 on a walk-off single by Gage Goldberg. And it was his second walk-off hit of the week. So he'd actually done it on Friday as well for Bernie Champion. And famous father Bill Goldberg was definitely very, very fired up at Gage getting another walk-off knock for those guys in that rivalry game. But competed with two strikes against a good left-handed pitcher, just shortened up and pulled a grounder into the hole at shortstop and got the job done for those guys. So it was a really cool moment for Gage, who I know has worked really, really hard on the baseball side. He's known as a football player. He's going to Colorado to play football, but he's gotten so much better at baseball over the years. And I know he loves the sport and has put a ton of time into it. And it was cool to see him having a cool, really good senior season for those guys so far. But for Bernie Champion, I want to go see Jordan Ballin, who I'm really, really high on. Left-handed hitting shortstop, really good
Was
athlete.
he?
Can, but he was balling. He was balling. He hardly ever strikes out. He's struck out 4 times this entire year, and you can see why. Like, I posted a video of his swings, and like, he had 4 at-bats. He made hard contact all 4 times. He had a rocket to center field. That the Smithson Valley center fielder Jackson Duffy made a really good running catch on deep, deep in center field. That was his first at bat. Then he hit a couple of hard line drives the other way. He actually ended up having a hard single in the seventh inning that kind of helped set the stage for Goldberg to have that walk off knock. But he can hit, man. He just doesn't whiff, and he doesn't chase either. I mean, it's a really good combination. I think he's going to be a classic top of the order kind of guy where his approach is more contact than impact, but because of his speed, because of the line drives, he's going to hit the balls in the gaps. He's going to have some doubles. He's going to get on base. He'll steal some bags. I think he's got a chance to stick at shortstop as well. And that's a really good get for UTSA. And it wouldn't be a surprise to see him have some success early on because he just doesn't strike out and he chooses good pitches to swing at. So he had a good night. Cameron Logan, an uncommitted senior outfielder, had a really good night as well. He had two really hard base hits off a good arm. He's athletic. He can run. Competed really well. He's hitting 409 this year. I think anybody that's looking still in the market for, you know, a right-handed hitting outfielder that's athletic, I'd call over there to Bernie Champion and see what they have to say about Cameron Logan because he was an impressive player. On the Smithson Valley side, I wanted to go see Zach Gingrich again. Who's on our 5 till 55 list along with Jordan Ballin. And Gingrich, first at bat of the game, hit a screaming double into the right to the left center gap. Just a really impressive swing. And then later in the game, he got his team on the board with a solo homer. And it was one of those bats where he took a swing and fouled a pitch back. It's like, oh, we better have the camera ready because this one might go deep into the night. And sure enough, a couple pitches later, just hammered a high, deep home run over the right field wall. And I'm a huge fan of him. And you know, you watch him hit, he's one of those guys at the high school level that's already figured out how to hit off his backside. And he's strong and he's athletic. And when you combine those things, you can get a guy that can really, really impact the baseball. And that's what he's been doing for Smithson Valley. And a really, really good get for Texas State. He ended up moving up to number 28 on our list, actually one spot right ahead of Jordan Ballin, who was number 29. But and Gingrich has been throwing a lot of really good innings for Smithson Valley as well. I saw he struck out 15 guys in an outing recently. But he's a position player first at the next level because left-handed hitters like that with that kind of power, those kind of tools, those guys are valuable commodities. And Texas State got a good one there. MJ Espinoza got the start for Smithson Valley. He said he's to Hill College, and I give him credit. You mentioned Xavier Mitchell. It's fun to go see these guys in high school settings because they kind of get challenged and see how they respond. And Bernie Champion challenged him early, forcing the pitch with runners on base. And it's like he got through about the third inning, and it was all like he was like, "All right, I'm through it. I'm going to empty the tank." And he got to the sixth inning and was still throwing 89 miles an hour in the sixth inning, and just relentlessly challenging guys with fastballs. I was a little surprised he didn't throw a slider more because it was typically either a called strike or a whiff at a pretty high rate. But he just went after guys with fastballs. And the only lefties he saw, he'd mix in about an 83 mile an hour changeup that he could throw for strikes as well. So really competitive, impressive effort. Gave his team a chance to win by pitching deep into the game there and emptying the tank. It was really fun to watch him compete. I really enjoyed seeing him. So fun atmosphere. Two teams I think can go really, really deep into the playoffs. Two really talented teams and clean baseball too. Lots of good
Yeah.
defense. Lots of strikes on the mound. Oh, I didn't mention Birdie Champion starter Sawyer Smith, who's a righty in the 2025 class. Athletic was 82-84, spun a breaking ball for a strike, really easy delivery, projects, long arms, high waist. He's gonna fill out, strike thrower. I wouldn't be surprised if this time next year, like, hey, Sawyer Smith's in the upper 80s and a JUCO grabbed him, as they saw the strike throwing, the command and execution. Just a really slow heartbeat on the mound. Nothing really rattled him at all. It was fun to watch him pitch as well. So it's good to get down to San Antonio and get some eyes on a team that I hadn't seen yet and I wanted to see. Yeah, Braylon Payne ended up being. It's always funny when you make a drive and then you drive back. It's like, yeah, you feel like, all right, that was a good trip. Saw a
Yeah.
really good player who was really good with his arrow pointing up, and it's going to be fascinating to see where he's selected in the Major League Baseball draft because I could see
Well,
why some teams would really, really, really like him and project him as a big time prospect.
yeah, and that's a good segue into going into the 55, but it is it when you go see a guy that you've been hearing about from all these people, and then they do what you've been hearing, it's just really nice. Like, it makes it tricky, because some of these guys on the list, putting up massive numbers, or pro scouts are in there to see them, or it's tough when you go and show up. And a great example, Jace Souza in our tournament or in the festival,
Festival.
there were some big time people in to see him, and he walks, gets hit by a pitch. Like, over the course, there was a bunch of people in there to see him on Thursday in a doubleheader, and he just wasn't getting much to hit, got hit and all that. And it's just so frustrating. Like, you can feel like you wasted a trip. I remember a scout visibly groaning, or audibly groaning loudly, and just storming off after what was probably going to be his last at bat because he got hit by a pitch. And so when you get to see these guys do what they're capable of doing, it's just it does. It makes it feel like it's worth it. And it's what's tricky about it too, because we don't get to see all of these guys every time out. I've seen Rockwall and Heath a lot. I've seen a handful of these other teams a lot. So you feel like you have a pretty good, and some of those guys we see a lot in the summer too. But that's not just not the case for all of the guys that we're talking about here. And it leads to some, it can be tricky. It's not an easy exercise to rank these guys, because there's just so many factors, the level of competition, it's just a lot of things go into it. And with this group, like we'll talk about, I mean, there's some injuries play a part in this too, about where they fall. And there's some guys that we'll talk about that they had a clean bill of health and they've been healthy the whole year. They could easily be in the top 10, and if not the top five, but they just haven't been. That has to become part of the evaluation if it's a trend for some of these guys. So Just I thought that was a good segue into the 55.
Yeah, you mentioned the injury part. I kind of want to start it there because I think that that's what we had a lot of difficulty with the pitchers is that they've just been guy, and fortunately none of them have been like serious injuries. It's just been kind of something here or there or something that happened early in the season that they're kind of working back from. And there's been a lot of guys that have just like missed starts and missed time. And you know, when you come back, it's you know, you want to go out there for your team and, you know, your team wants to win games and like, who knows, you know, like what kind of protocols and how healthy guys are sometimes when they come back. But that to me was the hardest part is like, we had a lot of guys that have been like that on the pitching side. And it's like, well, what do you do with them? You know, like on one hand, you have to be in the present with, you know, what's happening on the performance side, on the stuff side, on the pitching side, but on the other hand, you can't ignore what you've seen in the past either, because that's, you know, once a guy shows that talent, that skill, like it's in there, you know, it's in there somewhere, you know, whether or not it was a one-off or whatever, it's in there somewhere. So that was a hard part with it, because there's some been some really, really talented arms that have just been missed at times, like, you know, Cooper Williams has missed some times. Cason Evans missed a little bit of time. Jackson Burns, you saw him when he just came back recently. Braden Bergman, Houston Tomlinson. Like you kind of go down the list with these guys, and you know, Adin Simms is a guy who's just coming back from Tommy John surgery and throwing some relief innings for Forney. I believe Berkley Roddy's missed a little bit of time as well. And again, fortunately, none of these are like serious issues, but it's hard, you know, the season goes by fast. These guys want to go out there, they want to have success, but at the same time, they wouldn't be aware of, you know, potentially what could happen in the future, whether that's a draft or college, you know, like, you know, some of these guys have had major, you know, draft aspirations heading into the year. So they've got to balance that as well. So that's what kind of, that to me was the toughest part is like, well, you can't just look at these, some of these guys and be like, oh, this is who he is now. It's like, well, that's what we were saying in the summer or last spring when we were seeing these guys really, really good. So kind of had to balance that, but at the same time, you had to acknowledge the guys that were moving up, that were performing at a really high level. And to me, it was the biggest 180. That's probably not the right way to phrase it, but for lack of a better phrase, the biggest 180 I've done on a guy, I think is Dayson Hill. And I say that I think he was like 15th on our last list. So like still an extremely highly rated guy. But you know, coming out of summer, like scouts were just buzzing about him, and I was like, you know, like we saw him this spring and like last year as a junior, and like there's one time it was like the velocity's there, it's like oh my goodness, and other times it was kind of fluctuating and like the delivery and stuff like that, and then this spring it's like he's put a massive green check mark by everything like I personally wanted to see from him, better delivery, better operation, better control, better command. He's stronger. He's holding his stuff. He's throwing harder. He's showing two breaking balls. He's showing a changeup that we saw in the fall that we got really, really excited about because we just hadn't seen it that often. And I was like, man, you've got this in your back pocket. That's a really good pitch. And it was like big check mark by everything. It's like everything I think you came out of summer wanting to see from Dayson Hill. It's like he did every single one of those. And unsurprisingly, he's had magnificent performances basically the entire spring. I believe he's leading all of 5A in strikeouts with like 90 or something like that. So,
And that's in only, I think, 40 innings, too.
yeah, right. Like, I think if you did his strikeout percentage, I'm guessing it's over 40%, which is unbelievably good, even at the high school level. And look, I mean, we go see hard throwers and guys a lot of times sometimes that don't strike out guys. And that's not the case with Dayson Hill. So, like he ended up moving way up to number two on the list. And I've talked to some people that not only believe he's the best prospect in the state for the draft, but there's been some whispers that like he might be the best left-handed pitching prospect on the high school side in the nation. So he's obviously got the attention of the right people. From that regard, but he ended up moving up to number two on the list, and he and Michael Catalano, I think, were the guys on the pitching side that Really elevated. I think that their status as prospects and players and whatnot, just by the way they've thrown this spring. I mean, Catalano almost threw a perfect game with 21 strikeouts. He ended up striking out 20 guys. You saw him when he was up to 95 miles an hour. He's always been able to throw strikes with all his pitches, because he's one of those classic examples of infielder background, gets on the mound, the operation's really easy, he can throw strikes. And voila, he gets stronger and the stuff starts trending up as well. And I like him because it's like he can work around the low 90s and just kind of bump it up, I think, when he wants. And I think that's kind of the recipe for long-term success. So he ended up making a big move up to number 15 on the list. But the top, in addition to the pitchers, the top was really, really hard. I mentioned Dason Hill. You can make a case he should be number one. I think you could. I talked about Braylon Payne at length, so I drove back and I was like, did I just see the best prospect in the state? Like, left-handed hitter, center fielder, 80 runner, like developing power, the bat's getting better. It's like, oh man, that could be the best guy in the state. And that's why at Samford, it's like, oh my gosh, pro actions, like Elise plus future defense at shortstop, maybe a future 70 runner, left-handed hitter. He's gotten stronger. He's gotten more physical. Is he the best player in the state? We ended up going with Theo Gillen as a number one, and he's another guy that like kind of came out in the summer, and it's like, you know, like I wasn't as like sky high on him as maybe some other people were, and part of that too was like I might have just kind of over scouted him because he's 15 minutes away, and I was aware of, you know, the past shoulder injury and, you know, the defense and that sort of thing. But like, he's another guy that came out of the offseason. It's like, what do we want to see? Stronger, healthier, athletic. And now his power, I think, is the big separator. Like, I think you could probably say it's at least future average power. It might be future plus raw power. And you start to think, okay, like, if you think he's at least a future 50 hitter as a left-handed hitter, and you're putting that kind of power grade on him, and he's really athletic, and he can run, like, and you like he's only struck out three times all year, and he has good plate skills. He's always had good plate skills. It's like that guy is really, really, really valuable. Even if you're kind of like, is he a second baseman? Is he a left fielder at the pro level? Maybe you can squint and think center field. You can try him there. But even if the defensive profile is kind of inconclusive, it's just from a pro side, the hitting has just been so good and so consistent. He's hitting before this week, he was hitting 492, I believe, with seven homers. Again, only three strikeouts, like 32 walks, like 28 steals, a bunch of doubles, a bunch of triples, and they play in a really good district, like Lake Travis, Buda Johnson, Dripping Springs. Like, I went to go see him against Cooper Rummel, who was throwing 92 miles an hour, and he smacked a hard hit off him and walked a couple times and stole a bag. It's like every single time you go see Theo Gillen, he hits. And I think we talk about that's the easiest way to evaluate a hitter is every time you see him, does he hit? In the case with Theo Gillen, every time we've seen him, he's hit. So he ended up claiming the number one spot. But unlike previous lists that we've done, Jett Williams was clear cut number one. Blake Mitchell, clear cut number one. At this point, it's like there's still, I think, a lot of competition. You know, Sawyer Strohsteiner, I think he's only struck out one time this year, I think, while winning track meets and throwing 93 miles an hour off the mound and flying around the bases and hitting and looking great as an athlete who's gotten stronger. Like, he's, I think, in the mix. Sawyer Farr, what do we say about Sawyer Farr in the year? Hey, can he hit for some more power? Can he add some strength? Can he add some weight? And he's done all of those things and still like making some really highlight reel plays defensively at shortstop, where it's like, wow, that's a rare athlete for a 6-foot-4 guy to be able to move like he does at shortstop. And you can project him at shortstop. Cade Arrambeaty has caught fire recently. I think he's hit four homers his last three games. And he's hitting over, I believe, over 400 now. He's slugging close, I believe, slugging over 900. So he's really kind of started slow to open the year, and he's really turned it up a notch there. And starting to show that mega hitting talent again. So the top was really difficult to put together, and then those pitching performances as well, and those guys, it was kind of like, how do you weigh that sort of thing. But it's just like, I'm just not a big believer in like, okay, you can, this is what he is now. No, we've seen these guys in the past. Like we've seen Houston Tomlinson throw 95 in the past. Like we've seen Cooper Williams throw four brilliant innings at area code where nobody could touch him. And it was against one of the best lineups in the country. So we've seen Jason Flores. You saw with the new cutter that could be a big difference maker for him. I've seen Blaine Brown where it's just like, oh my gosh, the upside here on both sides of the ball, pitching in and hitting is really, really special. Caleb Hoover been one of the best pitchers in the state and probably has the best power in the state from left-hand side. So it was kind of tough to position all that, but it has been fun to follow these guys at the top because it feels like these guys, their arrows are pointing up, which is really exciting and not typically the case each and every year.
Yeah, it is. It's a fun group. And I one of the things that I mean, I think, I wouldn't be surprised to see even a lot more movement between now and the final ranking for
Oh
some of
yeah.
these guys
Think of
because
Charlie Kincaid's on there at number 55. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I barely knew anything about Charlie Kincaid 3 months ago. I knew Highland
no.
Park, Wrighty, McLennan, and then it's just like we went and saw him, and it's like, oh, he's throwing 95 now and filling up the zone like with 70% strikes and is really projectable and a good mover for his size. Like you're right, it's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, I think too, like, we've mentioned some of them on the injury side. Like, if we get to see some of these guys just, and some of the early outings, like, I saw Jackson Burns early, right? Or early in his season, but in a month, and once he has several more starts under his belt, he may look like a totally different guy. But I mean, it's obvious the talent's there. But yeah, that's the part of that makes this kind of tricky. But it is a good group, and we keep getting names popping up left and right. Like Kincaid. Carson Bailey's another guy that can be in the mix. I mean, like these have big time. Some of these guys have big time stuff, and making that translate and being consistent, being healthy, all that. That can add to an easy jump for some of these guys. And I think, to brag on you a little bit, I think that's you're good at that. Like, I think that, you see some lists that, other places or, not trying to pump ourselves versus anybody else, but just human nature is that it's hard to change, these things drastically just because, it's you're somewhat admitting you were wrong in a sense, even though there's not really right or wrong in these things. But I think, your willingness to change a lot of it, is good. Like, I think there's and that goes along with the reality that these kids are changing a lot too. So like they're still in that development phase that they need time, and maybe something just clicks or they find a pitch that works for them and that makes them a completely different prospect or pitcher or hitter, whatever it is. They're still at a time when there's a lot of room for growth, and that shows up at different points for some people. Some people just hit the stride earlier than others, and that's what makes this fun. I mean, I think it's interesting to see, like, looking back at some of the past iterations of different classes, you see to see how much movement over time there is with this, and it makes a lot of sense. And some guys that it's another reason that I love that the recruiting rules have changed a little bit, just to eliminate some of the early recruiting and the decommitments and stuff that come along with it, and kids getting dumped because they haven't progressed, or teams just being irresponsible with handing out offers because they know they have time to figure it out and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's a good list, a lot of talent, and we keep just finding more and more people, like you finding Andre Wood. Like, I mean, that was a
Yeah,
new one for us.
shout out to our guy Coach Garver at Vista Ridge. Because if we had a dollar for every time a coach like blew a guy up to us, we went and saw him, and it was not quite what we were expecting. We'd have some free dinners coming our way. But yeah, he was Coach Garver was like, you gotta come see him, you gotta come see him. And I went and saw him, and I was like, that's probably the best operation I've seen this year from a starting pitcher, probably the easiest fastball I've seen. And he's blown up by guys even when he's in the upper 80s. And it's like, that's a really exciting guy. You You can project, and it's like, yeah, it's like, it's like we can't be everywhere, which stinks because there's probably more Andre Woods that are out there. But yeah, if you do this sort of thing, like you've got to, as best you can, be willing to admit like you're wrong. And that guys are going to change because they're going to change. Like their bodies are gonna change. Like their skill is gonna change. Like things are gonna change. And you just try to like find those waves and ride those waves with, the guys that are going up and maybe the guys have kind of plateaued a little bit or whatever it is. But I wanted to shout out the newcomers that jumped onto the list for the first time. I mentioned Kincaid earlier on. Braden Mulkey from Davenport, left-handed hitting outfielder. I saw him last spring and I really liked him and I was like, oh man, I'm trying like I think this guy is 55 level good. He's a little bit he's on the shorter side, but he's one of those compact athletes, can really run, and like he is like an explosive rotator in the box. So it's like he creates some impact, kind of similar to Kendall Johnson. Like he creates some impact off the back with just the way he rotates and like leveraging the strength and athleticism, the twitch that he has. And he's having another heck of a season again. And like I've seen him in games, like the competitive makeup is really, really, really good. It's like, okay, left-handed hitter that might be able to play center field. And that's one thing too that I think maybe the average player or fan or parent who looks at this list might not realize is that we do take into account like positional scarcity and also value. So if you look at the Major League Baseball and you look at the draft, you look at those sorts of things, left-handed hitters are going to get valued more than right-handed hitters because left-handed hitters are oftentimes going to have the platoon advantage. So there are more right-handed pitchers than there are left-handed pitchers. So ideally, you want to have more left-handed hitters than you would right-handed hitters because those left-handed hitters, in theory, should be able to hit right-handed pitching better than right-handed hitters. So it kind of, I do kind of keep that in mind as like a tiebreaker sometimes that like, left-handed hitters are going to get the benefit of the doubt more often than right-handed hitters, which, like a guy like Matt Scott at number 20, really good right-handed hitter, can hit for power. But if you're in a kind of a tiebreaker situation, if you're like a pro scout, well, you're probably going to get the benefit of the doubt sometimes to the left-handed hitter because of the platoon advantage, and things like that. So, and also left-handed pitchers, like there's just not as many left-handed pitchers. So if you find a really, really good one, chances are that guy's going to get valued more because of the scarcity element. Like go look at any draft prospect list right now and like or look at like you can find a bunch of really talented right-handed pitchers. Like it's crazy now that you can show up to games like almost all the time and see a right-handed pitcher throw 90 miles an hour. Like it's if you would have told me when I was in high school, hey, there's in when you're got two kids and married, all these righties are going to be throwing low 90s all the time. I'm like, no way. No way, because like seeing 90 back then, it was in the high school level. It's like, whoa, this is different. But it's just not hard to find that anymore. So that's something that's like, okay, like from a positional scarcity standpoint, there's probably like five really good lefties and like 50 really good righties. It's like the NFL draft. The quarterbacks are going to get bumped up. The offensive tackles are going to get bumped up. The pass rushing defensive ends are going to get bumped up. Because of that positional scarcity element. So there's that sort of thing as well. But newcomers on the list, I mentioned Kincaid, Mulkey. I talked about Tate Hickman last week. We've talked at length about Mason Cook. We just mentioned Andre Wood, mentioned AJ Ripley earlier on. Chance Crawford to me is an example of like betting on really, really good athletes who hit left-handed and can play center field. And that's what he is. Like his testing, like he almost ran as fast as Braylon Payne, and he had a better broad jump and a better vertical jump. So that's a phenomenal athlete. Again, who hits left-handed and can go get it in center field. And last I looked, he was hitting like, oh, he's hitting like almost 450 and with like only six strikeouts on the season. And East Texas Baptist is one of those programs when they come to Texas and get guys early on, like they usually nail their evaluations. And I think they nailed it with Chance Crawford. McClain Helton from Cy Woods continues to really hit left-handed hitter, outfielder, Like Braylon Payne, he's a year young for the grade, so that's even more projection that you can kind of have there with him. Mentioned Reese Lunsford in the past, like he's just fun to watch, man. Like he's really athletic, he's explosive, he rotates, he's got barrel control, he can really, really run. He's a heck of a player that's having an awesome season for Frisco Memorial. Riley Leininger is a guy we've talked about in the past. I went and saw him in the spring. I thought his agility and just his flexibility and his long-term physical outlook, I thought all those things were better. And he can really, really hit for some power from the left-hand side. He's actually having a heck of a season as a pitcher too, who can really spin a breaking ball as well. So, but those were the new names on the list. And yeah, sorry if I'm kind of just spitballing here, but I just kind of want to touch on a few things that I just wanted people to kind of be aware of that, like, and also too, like I always say, like you get to a certain point and there's not really any separation in the talent. It's just we number them, you know, because that's what you do when you have rankings lists and things like that. But you just reach a point where a lot of these guys, like, if you would have told me, hey, like, you know what? Like I think, you know, oh, I don't know. Like, I think Mason Cook should be 34 instead of 50. It's like, okay, yeah, I maybe, yeah. You know, there's just not that much separation as you go down the list between guys at the same position, and all that sort of stuff. So you can get to Five Tool and kind of read all the reports on these guys on the just list, just missed next 55 list, and then wrote about 24 other 25 other guys as well. So it ended up being do some math here, 135 guys that we basically did some sort of little report on. And it's good too, because I feel like we've seen so many of these guys in the spring, which is kind of our goal usually, is to try to see these guys as much as we can. Because it just it there's nothing that can replace seeing guys in person, especially at the high school level.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's just, like I used the example a couple weeks ago of just being in person and watching Wyatt Sanford take in and out and just move around. And then like you just kind of like you're viewing of Braylon Payne, you're just like, yep, that's what it's supposed to look like. And that, it's the being in person part, you just get to glean a lot of little things from these guys that like you talk about help separate, it's one thing to watch box scores and sometimes those things can be important and paint somewhat of a picture, but until you get to see all these guys up close and personal, like that's where I think the real value is, because it helps you prioritize these guys or categorize them, I guess is a better term, is like where they kind of fit in this kind of stuff, and are they they have a good attitude, do they look like they're a guy that's going to be able to continue to get better, or do they look like they're done growing? That's 6'1", 200 on this guy may look completely different than 6'1", 200 on that guy.
Yeah, that's the truth.
I mean, I know that I'm about the same size as most NFL defensive backs, and I do not look like they do. So it's about as clear of an example that I can give. So.
It's I used to always wonder too, like why some scouts and organizations would like put so much value into these like on-field like workouts. And then you go to one of them, or you go early and watch an in and out or a batting practice or whatever, and it's like, oh, that's why. Because it's easy to see who can, really stands out among their peers. And it's just like, huh, like their talent, their movements are just grabbing your attention in a way that's special, kind of compared to the rest of their peers. And I used to be like, oh, you know, why do you go to those things? They're not games. Like, yeah, guy's gonna hit the ball out of the yard, but can he hit in games? It's like, no, you need to go see like if those guys just look different than anyone else. And oftentimes they look different because
Max Ballou is a great example of that for me. I remember watching him 2 years ago in a in a tournament at Rockwall, and he just looked like a big leaguer in the box. And then, goes to Texas and doesn't do much as a freshman, and now I think he's still leading the Big 12 in home runs. So like it, but it's like, yeah, there it is. Like he just looked the part, like just the way he stood in the box and looked in a uniform is like, yeah, okay, He's the real deal. So,
Yeah, and it's like in like we know that because we've watched so much baseball over our lives that like you know what it looks like, you know? Like it's hard to explain sometimes, but you just like you've seen big leaguers, you've seen major prospects, you've seen great college players, you've seen great high school players. Like you kind of at a certain point you've seen so much that like it just kind of clicks in your head like, okay, yeah, that's what it looks like when the actions, the movements and the body and the takes and the swings and all those sorts of things are just a little bit different. But before we get out here, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about our friends at Hitforth. If you've gone to a college prospect camp, you've probably noticed the coaches are tracking everything. Many staffs will even have TrackMan showing live info on their video board during BP and scrimmages. It's not eye candy. They track data such as exit velocity and bat speed because it helps them identify skill sets that will translate and work at the college level. And more high schools are doing this as well. In fact, one of the most prominent high school programs in Austin, Texas, sends an email to incoming freshmen detailing what they view as acceptable exit velocity and bat speed. Simply put, if you can't hit the ball hard enough and consistently enough, you aren't going to get as many looks in high school and in college. So as the game moves more and more towards embracing tech and data, you are doing yourself a disservice if you aren't training with a staff that utilizes and understands both. The team at Hitforth in Austin, Texas is creating the standard for developing explosive and adjustable hitters. When you train at Hitforth, you will develop the power coaches are looking for, whether challenging the fences or drilling hard liners to all fields. Learning to move faster and swing faster will also make you a more adjustable hitter and improve your ability to make contact. Because the quicker you can swing the bat means you have more time to recognize pitches before deciding to swing. The best part about Hitforth is the accountability. Since the staff tracks every aspect of every swing you take, you get objective feedback about your improvements. Numbers don't lie. Check out hitforth.com to learn how you can get started. HITFORTH.com and on Twitter and Instagram as well. The accountability is huge. It's just different than everywhere else. I mean, they're full-time employees. They're getting in the facility hours before anyone comes in there and talking about who's coming in, what they need to work on, how they structure their workouts, if they need to switch up coaching voices because one coach might be better teaching or working on a thing than another coach. It's all the objective feedback, video, metrics, hit tracks, like they know what they're doing with the data. It's objective. It keeps them accountable, and they hold themselves accountable, and they get results. Go to their pages, you can see like the results they get with swings, with strength, with exit velocity, all the things that matter. The results are plentiful, and they're there. And it's some of the exit velocity improvements they get guys to experience are really, really eye-opening things. So go check them out, hitforth.com, and they have remote training as well. So if you're not in Austin, but you still want to participate in the training, the remote training is outstanding. If you've got somewhere to hit and you've got the work ethic, they've got the program for you. All the video examples, tracking everything as well, that can really help you out as well. So go check out those guys. Anything else before we jump out of here? The NFL draft has kind of snuck up on me. My buddy texted me yesterday. He's like, "Hey, are we gonna do pluckers for the draft like we typically do?" And I was like, "Oh my goodness, the draft is already happening."
Week from today,
So
right? Is that right? Week
yeah, a
from
week from
today?
today is the first round. I admit I have not really paid a whole lot of attention to the mocks and things like that thus far, but I will definitely be tuned in and glued to the screen for the first round, that's for sure.
I'm on the opposite end. I am at a paralysis analysis by paralysis standpoint.
Yeah.
I can slot most of these guys in my sleep for most positions, at least through the first two rounds. I'm ready. I think I'm annoyed that the Cowboys' best move is probably going to be to trade down. But that's where we are. So is what it is.
Where
But
are they picking?
excite they're at 24 right
Okay.
now. But they just need more picks because like the shape that the roster's in, they need multiple starters from this draft, and they don't have a fourth rounder because of the Trey Lance trade.
Oh, okay.
They really need to have four picks in the top three rounds somehow. And I think too, like just trading down a couple spots, I think might be able to achieve that. But it's a very offensive draft. I think like it seems like at the very least the first seven picks will be offensive players. I'm interested to see that. I think kind of the one of the more intriguing storylines is going to be the order that the receivers go. I mean, you have the big three with Marvin Harrison, Neighbors, and Adunze. But from 4 to 15, like a bunch of those guys could be first round, or they could be the fourth guy or the 15th guy. It's kind of a flavors type discussion for a lot of those guys right now. But I mean, from the Longhorn standpoint, I think you could see. I mean, you could have as many as three in the first round, up to six or seven in the top three rounds. But it'll be interesting to see for sure. Sweat off the field little move the other last week or whatever, gonna probably drop him further than he would have hoped, just because he kind of played right into the question mark about him in the first place. But I think Byron Murphy, I mean, Byron Murphy's starting to get some like top 15 pick, scuttlebutt. So,
I think you can thank Aaron Donald for that. Like, it's not, you don't get knocked anymore if you're undersized at the, I mean,
that's just
I
like,
say undersized just because he's short, basically. You know, like those guys
Well,
don't
it's,
get dinged anymore if they move in a
well, for the
special way
baseball
like
part
he
of
does.
it, there's a lot of little guys that need to be big fans of Jet Williams. Like he is a guy that can completely change that narrative. And it seems like he has already to some extent.
I think he has.
But I mean, it can even continue to grow as he goes up the ladder. But so.
I saw Schefter said that he heard AD Mitchell is going to go way higher than people think.
Well, people
But
are
then
split
today
on that.
I saw the diabetes thing, and it's just like, so I was like, oh, that's kind of which unfortunately is a thing. Like, I've heard that come up with pro baseball players at times, like prospects at times too. Like, it's a thing, like whether it's.
Well, it's a different world too. In college, you can have people, you're more likely to have people just like holding his hand all the way through the day. And I'm not saying that that was the case with him, but I mean, we had guys when I was at Texas that we had to do that to get them through the day. It was like, hey, it's time to wake up. Or, and you just knew that once they got the pro ball, like they were going to really sink or swim. And some of these guys fall in line with that too. So, it's weird. This is kind of lying season. It's, there's a lot of disinformation being
Oh
tossed around out
yeah, there's
there.
a lot of
And
shuffling and
I get irrationally annoyed when I hear people bring up S2 about CJ Stroud, because like that was obviously something that was floated like with ill intentions last year. And if anybody cared to listen or hear the real story on that, like it,
they don't.
it
That's
just
the
drives
problem.
me nuts. It just
We're in
drives
a
me nuts.
society that doesn't. They don't care. Like, by and large, people don't care about that anymore. So that's a bummer. But yeah, it'll come up. I'm sure it'll come up several times during draft commentary and stuff like that. So yeah, it's always fun to watch. I know you've probably listened to about 19 podcasts this week about the draft and mock
This
drafts
week,
and
you mean today?
To I was yeah maybe like on your
I already did
walk,
my
like you
walk.
probably had them 15x on your walk and probably hammered through about six or seven of them there.
I'm going to continue to say this, but the speed that I listen to people, some of these podcasts, changes my entire opinion of them. Like there are some of them that I have to listen to at 2x. Because whenever I listen to them at normal speed, it drives me crazy. It drives me nuts. Like I can't, like it's a they're almost like a different person. Like I and the chemistry too between some of like the guys that have like the ones that have multiple people on the podcast, like it seems to be so much smoother and funnier at, when they're sped up. But when they're in person or when it's like normal speed, it's kind of like I find myself just being like, I can't listen to this guy. I can't do it. But
There's
Anyways,
probably
but they're
someone on out there that thinks that about us too. Ah, oh, God, these
I
guys gotta
do. I
be
do.
you
I
got
do.
these guys have gotta be at least 2x. I can't stand them at normal speed.
I prefer us at 2x when it, like if I listen to back to any snippets, like I do not list like listening to myself
No, it's
and
not fun. No, not fun at
slow.
all.
So, but
Not fun
anyways.
at all. But all right, well, that wraps up episode 153 of the Five Tool Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Five Tool Pod. Make sure you're keeping it locked into all the Five Tool coverage, especially at fivetool.org. I got coverage everywhere: California, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Arkansas. Everywhere in the state of Texas, we're out covering a lot of major high school baseball. So go to fivetool.org and look into those. I think they're very reasonably priced subscriptions, especially for all the video access you get. Even if you're just a fan, like to be able to keep track of everything that's happening, it's a great value, fantastic value for players to get access to all their videos and coverage and things like that. So go check that out at fivetool.org. But for Drew, I'm Dustin. Until we talk to y'all next time, have a good Friday, good weekend, and take care.